Friday, December 21st, 2018, and it's freaking 61 degrees. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Ken Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our capital muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Today is our last show of 2018. Good freaking riddance 2018. That's all I got to say. On today's show, it's shutdown mania. Trump threatens to shut down the government for a very long time if the Senate does not pass a bill with $5 billion for his Great Wall of America. Despite what he said during his meeting with Chuck and Nancy, he's blaming the Democrats. Mad Dog Mattis resigns as Trump's defense secretary. Mattis' resignation letter is widely seen as a protest against Trump's announcement that he wants the U.S. troops out of Syria and Afghanistan. Mattis also objected with Trump alienating allies and embracing autocratic regimes like China and Russia. German officials call it, quote, a moment of alarm in Europe. And House Democrats say ixnay to the Green New Deal Committee, championed by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and other newly elected progressives. Instead, Democrats tap Florida Democrat Representative Kathy Castor to head a revived House panel on climate change. Castor didn't waste any time embracing ExxonMobil's talking points, arguing it might be, quote, unconstitutional to ban members from the committee who are flush with big oil and gas money. Despite being hugely popular, Democrats still can't get it through their head that a Green New Deal is the way forward. And as a side note, according to the Nonpartisan Center for Responsive Politics, Castor accepted more than $73,000 from energy and natural resource sector over her 12-year tenure in Congress. And that includes $60,000 from corporate political action committees. Just saying. And there was a climate agreement in Poland, which helped to bolster the Paris Agreement. The agreement did establish a rule book for how countries should measure the greenhouse gas emissions, report on emission cuts, and hold each other accountable. So that's a good move forward. We'll see where the U.S. is on that. And many countries, however, were infuriated when the U.S., Russia, and Saudi Arabia and Kuwait blocked language welcoming a recent report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that concluded the world must limit warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius or face catastrophic impacts. And basically what that means is they can just pretend they don't know about it, right, officially. Hackers broke into NASA. They broke into NASA servers and downloaded Social Security numbers and other personal info. NASA officials say they still don't know the total number of employees that were affected. However, a secure line has been established for the alien invasion, I think. And the city of Op, Alabama Police Department blames a recent rise in homicides on townspeople moving away from God and embracing Satan. Just threw that one in there just for a happy new year. Today's local regional focus, Andrew Cuomo releases an extensive legislative wish list that includes legalizing marijuana, an Equal Rights Act, campaign ethics and finance reforms, a Green New Deal, and more. Alert, alert, Democrats. You got centrist Cuomo arguing for a Green New Deal. Just saying. Governor Tom Wolf says it's time to start looking at legalizing marijuana, too. Well, you know, with New Jersey and New York getting ready to legalize it in 2019, Pennsylvania said, okay, we're going to hitch our wagon to that train. GOP leaders follow suit by blowing smoke and reefer madness. Stephen Caruso from Pennsylvania Legislative Services wrote an excellent report on how Southeast Democrats were unified under the leadership of Madeline Dean and were able to pick up 5 of 7 House leadership positions. Boom, boom, boom. Go Madeline Dean. And it's been over a month, and I can barely remember the guy who ran against Governor Wolf in November. In today's last call, the Pentagon is finalizing a proposal for the establishment of a United States Space Force as the 6th military branch. You remember, we've been on the Space Force here, the last call. And according to the draft proposal, yes, the proposal is there. The Space Force will be organized under the Department of Air Force. The Space Force will be made the same mold as the Marine Corps, which is actually an independent service that resides under the Department of Navy. And, quote, the Space Force shall be organized, trained, and equipped to provide for freedom of operations in, from, and to the space domain for the United States and its allies, to provide independent military options for joint and national leadership, and to enable the lethality and effectiveness of the joint force. Space Force! And it's a white Christmas on Mars. At least there. European Space Agency's Mars Express probe beamed back awesome images of a 50-mile-wide Martian crater filled with ice. The Korolev crater is on the northern pole plane, which surrounds Mars's polar ice cap. And according to scientists, the crater contains 530 cubic miles of water ice, as much as Great Bear Lake in northern Canada, they say. The ice is a mile thick in places, and the images are just stunning. There's like, looks like snow-capped tundra stuff. It's kind of cool. And Arizona State University launches the Milo Institute. Get ready for public-private partnerships in space exploration, everybody. Lockheed Martin's funding the bill. Sean prepares for 2020 by going on a mega Facebook purge. See ya! Fox News has an extensive debate about gingerbread people being gender neutral. And they're insisting that you make all gingerbread people that you bake for this year's Christmas anatomically correct. The birth of the ginger schlong is how it is. Rick Smith Show, remember, tune in to the Rick Smith Show, Free Speech TV, this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And tune into Rick's Daily Show, from 9 to 11 p.m. Monday through Friday at thericksmithshow.com. And be sure to download his podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And as we bring 2018 to a close, I want to thank all our members who have stuck with us over the years, over the year and over the months, depending on when you joined. We all know that if we want 2019 to be better than 2018, we want our progressive future, we're going to need progressive media. Right, you got anything left in your pocket after doing Christmas and holiday shopping? Well, why don't you kind of consider becoming a member of Raging Chicken Press? We are pull no punches, homegrown progressive media, and we're looking forward for a bright reboot as we move towards 2020. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. 2018 midterm elections are really in the rearview mirror. Now we're turning to attention to communities of resistance, building power, progressive organizing for 2020. Become a member, patreon.com/rcpress today. So, Sean, happy almost New Year, man.
Yeah, and Merry Festivus.
Merry Festivus. It's, I believe, if I got the numbers correct, this is episode 118. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. As we 118 to close out 2018. That's not bad.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, we've been going at this for a while, you know?
Yeah, but so I mean, like, but the pressing issue of our day is not that it's, like, 70 degrees out.
Definitely not.
On December 21st, first day of winter. It is the fact that we have gingerbread people now instead of gingerbread men.
I can't even believe that.
I mean, like, I guess, like, there is so much going on this week, you know, with, like, shutdown, Mattis. The thing we got, the shiny little toy we got to talk about the most is gingerbread people.
That's right, man.
Non-binary, gender neutral gingerbread people.
Look, ginger genitalia should be correct based upon how they were formed in their genetic. Oh, wait, they're cookies. Never mind. Men and women. Real men and real women. That's it.
But it is amazing, like, how far down Fox News is digging into, like, the war on Christmas stories.
Oh, my God.
Like, it is, like, every year is, like, the war on Christmas. Like,
yeah, it's just like, it's like,
and they're
it's
not getting into, like, gender identity politics, which is absolutely amazing because the right is so far against gender identity politics and identity politics in general, unless it's white identity politics.
No, look, Fox News, all these people, they're flaming heterosexuals, and that's really what it is. Is they got to have – and like the most like outdated, absurd notion of heterosexuality is what they have to embrace. And any idea that anything beyond their narrow view of the world exists, they have to kill it. I mean, that's really how they look.
And we're only having this conversation because of toxic masculinity.
That's right. That's right. Well, and the gingerbread people.
Yeah, I mean, we should end the podcast now on this debate, because that's it. It was just the gingerbread people was the pressing issue of the week. I mean, I cannot believe that we're talking about this.
Yeah, well, here we are. Here we are. Well, just in time, too, because we won't have to talk about it for long, because it's shutdown mania. Yep. So what do you think? What do you think the chances? Are they going to come to some last-minute agreement?
I think so.
You think they're going to build, give the money? Think Chuck is going to roll over and give his $5 billion for the Great Wall of America?
I don't think so.
No?
No.
You think Trump's going to cave?
Yeah, I think so.
I still want to know how Trump plans on getting that $5 billion from Mexico to the bill. Huh?
To this. There's a GoFundMe page. It's helping out with this.
Yes, I heard. It's like, what, $100,000 already or something?
No, I think they shut it down after like $6 million.
Oh, they got the $6
million? Yeah.
There's a grift. Somebody's living nice on some island somewhere right now.
I'm taking a beeline to the fastest like airport with a suitcase full of money.
There's people like, can you believe it? People actually gave $6 million this thing. Can you believe it? We're fucking rich. I'm quitting my job. Who actually set up the GoFundMe page?
Some right-wing grifter. I don't even know who.
We're going to take your money, and really, I swear, we're going to give it to the Trump administration to build the wall. I swear. Cross my heart.
And did you see
I have a gingerbread people.
Did you see a sheriff in Massachusetts was offering inmates to send down to Texas to build the wall?
Oh, my God. I've been working on the railroad.
This is
working
like
on the chain gang.
But the thing that's amazing to me the most is like the Republicans have control of the legislature still, and they can't do this themselves.
Well, Trump has been now pushing. He's been pushing to get what's his face? Turtle Schumer. Face there. No. Why can't I think of it? McConnell. Been trying to get McConnell to actually change the Senate rules to pass it with a simple majority. So, but there's been both a whole bunch of Democrats and Republicans who actually kind
left
of
sent. Town.
What's that?
They left town.
Well, there's that. I mean, I think that's why they sent the letter to Trump. They sent the letter like, we resist, or sent it to McConnell or whatever. We don't want you to change the rules or whatever like that. So, like, we just want to go home.
I mean, which is a really good, like, tried and true tactic of, like, you know, legislatures across the country, especially in Pennsylvania. Like with the Senate did, they just passed everything, left, and like didn't even like vote on the abuse bill,
right.
Which seems like the same thing you're doing here. They just vote on it and left. You're like, well, we left town. We're not coming back.
Yep.
So take it or leave it.
So now they're getting all principled about Senate rules. Because they don't want to come back. That's really what it comes down to.
I mean, come on. Would you want to fly back from Alaska or, like, the Midwest and face, like, a 6 or 7 hour, like, flight into D.C.?
No, but, you know, maybe you could wait to leave until things are concluded, too. I mean, that would be something to think about. I mean, I'm just saying.
Just leave. Vote and leave. Like, don't even care what the other chamber does. Just leave and, you know, dump it on their feet. It's like, you don't do it. It's your fault.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Whatever. We'll see.
I don't think Trump's going to hit the wall. I just don't
see. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Did you happen to catch what's-his-face Paul Ryan come out of the White House after his good meeting with Trump?
I did not.
It was like – this is like his – Paul Ryan's goodbye.
Just like one last day.
One last – he goes in there, right, and apparently, you know, Trump says, I'm not signing the bill. And he comes out and he's like, well – the president, right, he shows himself to be the freaking sycophant that he is, right? He goes on, he's like, the president, we had a very productive conversation, but he said he's not going to sign a bill. Not going to sign the bill. Like, even though we've passed it and everything, we're not going to sign a bill. So we're going to go back and we're going to come up with another one, just like he said. And then he handed over to Kevin, what's-his-face, McCarthy, the kind of incoming who's expected to be the next leader. And Kevin McCarthy did just as well about not being able to speak words that he did when he gave it his first go-round after what's-his-face, Boehner left. But he got up there and said, yeah, and then we're just
bad.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And all the Capitol reporters nodded dutifully like they knew what he was saying. And there you go.
Inaudible.
Well, yeah. And it's, you know, crazy. So we have that going on. We've got a kind of, you know, Mad Dog Mattis, Jim Mattis, defense secretary, resigns. Basically saying that, you know, hey, You know, you're screwing over our allies. You're embracing kind of like countries that want to kind of like spread their autocratic notions of governance to the world. And you're taking my words away from me. So, bye. So Mattis is out, and I guess people are really freaking out in Europe and the other allies because now they're like, "What the hell?" He was like, "You know, again, this is we're going to see this kind of stuff."
But he was like the last like institutional mainstay that we could like.
There's a great way of putting it, right? Right, institutional mainstay. I think that's really what we got to say because you can't say like the last sane person, Mad Dog Mattis. You can't say the last kind of like reasonable person. I mean, the guy was already kind of fairly. You know, like hawkish, right? So, it's you know part of what we do now is that we follow the kind of the path of recuperation of everyone. But now they're heroes. See, we all believe the same
thing. Oh, he's a doctor?
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, look, he just gave this great speech.
Oh, he's a doctor.
Right, exactly. You know, and meanwhile, right? You know, I'm sure what Mattis is like. You know, like just basically hearing in his head all the time is like, you know, like.
That's a felony also. You're going to the jail.
And he's like, I'm out of here, man. He's like, when do I get my my chance to go? I was like, oh, look, where is Michael Cohen?
You're going to the jail.
Oh, sorry, we can't do that. So, no, but I do believe Mattis had severe problems with this guy.
I mean, I think Mattis was like listening to Chris Matthews, who predicted that Trump is going to have to be forced to resign in the coming weeks. And Mattis wanted to get out of here as quick as possible.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. Well, you know what's going to happen. What would happen anyways is like, you know, if you take. Well, I don't know. Who knows? I'm not going to speculate. I don't care. I honestly look, this stuff is going to play itself out. What is. And if I have to hear this is just a total side note. If I have to hear commentators talk about how Trump is signaling things one more time, I'm going to vomit. Right. It's like this is like the new word that everybody's using because they've got. I mean, like, what are you going to do? Like, you're going to try to say that there's some kind of strategy. No, like he said it. He didn't signal it. He said it. Right. And to think that he's playing some subtle game about something. Come on, man. I mean, this is just for people to talk about. It's just going to be a disaster, and we're going to have to watch the disaster happen, right, as all the prosecutions come down, and then we're going to have to kind of, like, as best we can, embrace the disaster so that we can have to clear house so that we can move forward, right? I refuse to try to kind of turn this into some sort of semblance of rational discourse when it's not. It's fucking nuts. And that's how I'm closing out 2018. It's like, I don't want to hear what Trump officials, they seem to be suggesting that blah, blah, blah. And they're, no, it's a disaster.
Really presidential.
Watch the wreck. What's that?
He sounded really presidential.
Yeah, like, fuck that. I mean, just like, I mean, come on. Anyways, but what I really cared about this week, other than watching the train wreck, was the moves that, you know, for people to remember, we've talked about this on the program before, is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and a lot of the incoming progressives ran for election on anti-climate change, a Green New Deal, right? Bold moves, right, to attack the issue of climate change. And they got major pushback because basically they wanted to set up a separate committee that was specifically for setting this thing up, this Green New Deal. There are existing committees on climate, but they're like investigating the impacts of climate and what should we do and blah, 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 right? This one committee was going to come in with an agenda, right? And so kind of official Democrats or kind of like, you know, establishment Democrats who basically had say over this, some people on the Energy Committee, some on the, I forget the other committee, but basically who saw climate as their thing and were getting kind of like plenty of nice contributions from oil and gas, right, in order to kind of like be reasonable on climate, whatever the hell that means, right, and be reasonable, like what? Don't what? Think about transition to kind of like renewable energy source? Was that what reasonable is? I mean, that's just – don't tax the gas companies? Is that what reasonable is? I mean, come on. So what they did this week is that – and really pissed me off is that they basically made their move and they put Representative Kathy Castor of Florida in charge of a revitalized committee on climate change, right? That has been, again, known. It's been populated by people who get money, who get contributions from big oil and gas. And what was remarkable about it is, like, after the move was announced, right, she came out and basically said, well, what about the idea, because of the Green New Deal, that committee, the whole idea behind that too is, well, not the whole idea, but part of the idea was people who are taking money from the oil and gas industry cannot be on that committee, right, because of their track record. Right. The history of, like, billions of dollars of falsification of data, right, of manipulation of public discourse, of the manufacture of lies and fabrications of climate skepticism, all that garbage. That should basically say these people are off limits. Right. But no, they welcome them in. And they say, nope. We're going to have here, and we're going to have Caster head this committee, in part because she's already taken a bunch of corporate money from big oil and gas. And so basically what this is a commitment to is a commitment to kind of staying the course. Now, again, do I think Ocasio-Cortez and, like, you know, and all the progressives that came in are just going to let this fall? No. Right.
They'll be having press conferences and rallies and demonstrations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I'm not worried about them, but I'm just, like, saying this is where the pressure needs to be on the Democrats over and over and over again. And look, there's very real reasons, right? I get the whole fact, the whole argument about jobs, right? That's why the Green New Deal is the way to go, right? Because just like what you had in the New Deal is that the Green New Deal is a job-producing plan. It is a poverty reduction plan. It is a racial justice plan. And it can get us it's the best hope to getting, like, at least to some sort of kind of, like, non-cataclysmic future. So Green New Deal it is, folks. And Democrats need to get on board with this.
And it's also the type of thing where it's like, you know, there's no jobs on a burnt planet.
No, that's exactly it.
I mean,
that's exactly it.
You want jobs. There's going to be no jobs on a burnt planet, on a fried planet, you know.
Well, I mean, what does it say about any of us, right, who we're basically saying, no, we're willing to sell the future of our children, right? We're willing to sell it off, right, because of short-term, because we refuse to think long-term. And that is just a lack of imagination, a lack of political will, in my view, but... The good news was that there was some sort of agreement in Poland that helped to bolster the Paris Agreement. Again, the U.S. is kind of on the sidelines about this one, given the Trump stance. But there were kind of, like, more transparency about how carbon emissions are being measured, right, across for all the signatories. Some very, clear guidelines about how you measure those emissions. So everybody's kind of working from the same playbook. Right. So that's pretty good. But again, remember, this is all voluntary. Right. There's no sanction for not following it. So we'll see. Anyway, so that was my big news of the week, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. He says. I don't know. Just got me.
I'm just like, whatever at this point.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm like,
it's just like it's end of the year. Holidays are here. It might be the last time we have a Christmas. You know, don't know. Next year's Christmas might be like, you know.
Sean, for all I know, next year Santa Claus is going to be a woman. You know, that's how insecure our futures, our cultural future is.
Well, here's something we didn't put in the notes.
Yeah,
Stephen Miller.
That dude's a whack job, man. Where he gets his deep reservoirs of, like, righteous rage is unbelievable.
Remember him, like, back with when the Duke stuff was going on 10 years ago. And it's amazing to see him, like, where he's at right now. And, like, I mean, the dude's just a straight-up fascist. Like, he is, like...
He is.
There's just no other way of, like... And also, like, the spray on hair this past weekend on MSNBC or Meet the Press...
That was good.
...was sort of hilarious.
Gotta like that.
Yeah, I mean...
Gotta like that. You know, it's funny, though, because he's, like, the one guy who doesn't get any shit from Trump.
Well, yeah. I mean, the dude, it's almost at, like, this point, he's the person controlling Trump.
Yeah. I think he's, like, he feeds the narrative. He knows how to feed the narrative to Trump and direct his attention in particular ways. Look, and Trump is perfectly, you know, I mean, he's already locked into Fox News, Fox and Friends, so There it is. Anyways, it is coming close. We'll see what happens with all this stuff that's going on. I mean, it's you know, right now, if the government does shut down, it's a partial shutdown. But, you know, if Trump, you know, with a promise that he's going to go on for a long time, you're talking about, you know.
But dude doesn't even have an attention span of like a gnat. He can't go that far.
Well, we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, maybe he'll dig in. Who knows? And you're talking about the, you know, potential of like, you know, laying off like close to 500,000 workers. Right. And basically shutting down a whole bunch of services. Right. The IRS is already kind of freaking out about it since the last time it happened because it knows it's going to impact the upcoming tax season. That you've got Department of Energy is sending out kind of information about, you know, what to do in a nuclear disaster. You know, what if they do if there's a meltdown when no one's working or they're not getting paid? All at the airports, you're going to have now you're going to have security officers. The TSA are all going to be they're still going to be working, but they just won't be getting paid.
And, so, you know, if you're like Scott Perry, you can just say that he knows that like government workers can afford to miss a paycheck because they don't live paycheck to paycheck.
There you go.
He'll be just fine.
Scott Perry, everybody. Scott Perry. Very good, very good, very good. Yeah, so anyways, that's our I'm going to have happy close here. So I did love this story, though. I have to say that the city of Op, it was actually, it sounds like a Dr. Seuss name, right? The city of Op, O-P-P, is in Alabama, and the police department, basically, there's been some increase in homicides and things in the area. And then the police department got on its Twitter account and basically said, well, you're moving away from God and you've embraced Satan. That's why we got so many homicides. And that's, it was, and I think at the end of it, then he said, Merry Christmas. No. None of those happy holidays bullshit. Right. I think it actually said it's like see you embrace Satan with your ginger people. No. anyways, we'll keep this one short today, folks. We come back, do our PA kind of regional focus, and then we'll have some fun space news in the end. There. I want to remind everybody, if you can, before the 2018 comes to a close, become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress today. Become a member. Thank you to all our members who have stuck with us over the years. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back right after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the day that Red Scare deportations began. 249 radicals, including anarcho-feminist Emma Goldman, were packed onto the USS Buford and deported to Russia. The year of 1919 had seen massive social convulsions. The Seattle General Strike had kicked off the year. It was followed by coal strikes and steel strikes, bombings and race riots. There were increasing fears of communist ideas and influences in the wake of the Bolshevik Revolution. These events touched off a draconian response by the U.S. federal government. Together with the young J. Edgar Hoover, Attorney General A. Mitchell Palmer conducted mass raids and arrests of more than 1,000 suspected working-class radicals. The Department of Labor agreed that proclaimed membership in the Union of Russian Workers was a deportable offense. The ship set sail and docked in Finland, where trains transported the deportees into the Soviet Union. The vast majority of those deported had no criminal records and had never participated in any acts of terrorism. They were expelled for speaking out about their political opinions. According to Regan Schmidt, author of Red Scare, FBI and the Origins of Anti-Communism in the United States, employers' associations fueled the anti-radical climate. They were engaged in an intense open shop counterattack against post-war organizing campaigns and strike activity. The main goal was to discredit unions as subversive, Bolshevistic, and alien to basic American values. Donning the name The American Plan, closed shops were referred to as Sovietism in disguise, and propaganda campaigns were waged to ensure blacklists, internal union dissension, yellow dog contracts, and strike breaking.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. On today's regional focus, we'll get into, we'll start a little north of, well, north and east, I guess, of Pennsylvania with some news from Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, after losing his special little majority in the state Senate, I guess, like representatives, Congress, state legislature, that he's actually taking a little bit of a progressive turn after he put his finger in the air and saw which way the wind was blowing. So what's happening up there, Sean?
Well, so Cuomo is going to be on his wish list, is going to be embracing a bunch of progressive legislation. But really, this shows why you actually need to have primaries from time to time to push candidates. If you're, even if you're going to lose, you know you're not going to win. You're still going to push candidates on the issues, or you're going to get a lot of bad Democrats out of office, like the ones who are part of the IDC, and you know, which prevented Democrats from having a majority inside the state Senate up there for so many years, since 2010, pretty much, because you had eight Democrats, mainly from New York City, caucus with Republicans to keep Republicans in power. They were all defeated. They were wiped out. Well, six of the eight were wiped out in the primaries last year, and effectively just this was after Cynthia Nixon made this an issue, the IDC.
Yep.
She made Cuomo support the IDC an issue. The IDC folded, but these Democrats still faced were still you know, wiped out in the primaries. And yeah, Cuomo is endorsing a whole bunch of progressive legislation. First on his list, he wants to legalize recreational marijuana. He wants ethics reforms, strictly curtailing a legislator's outside income. He wants an Equal Rights Act for women, which will codify Roe versus Wade in there. He wants a Green New Deal for New York to make New York's electricity 100% carbon neutral by 2040. And ultimately, the state's entire carbon footprint. Expand firearm regulations, the ban bump stocks, which just happened this past week with the Department of Justice. He wants to eliminate cash bail, which is an issue that you know, Larry Krasner has been working on, and some other local judges here in Pennsylvania. Increase spending on affordable housing. He wants the New York Dream Act to make sure undocumented residents can get tuition at in-state schools, tuition assistance. Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act, which would protect LGBTQ New Yorkers from discrimination and hate crimes. And then a whole entire list. Like he has a Christmas list full of ideas for next year. The Child Victims Act, which would raise the statute of limitations for victims of child abuse and to pursue criminal and civil actions against alleged perpetrators of abuse. You know, that right there may be something that, you know, some in the Pennsylvania legislature may want to consider passing, considering the sexual abuse scandal that happened with the Catholic Church and the grand jury report this past year.
Man, big time.
Yeah, he also wants to enact campaign finance reforms and limit contributions. And he has a whole bunch of stuff that his wish list, which is a pretty substantial and progressive like list of progressive ideas that he wants pushed through.
Well, there you have it. I mean, so what's your read on this? Do you think any of it's for real? You think it's him responding to the political winds?
I think it's definitely him responding to the political winds. I don't think he's going to be a good, suitable candidate for president. But, I mean, at this point, like, New York State will never have a Republican governor again, pretty much. I mean, it's just like how the numbers are.
Yep.
Like, statewide offices. And it's time to start, pushing this stuff through. The first thing he wants to have done is to have recreational marijuana legalized by like 2019. New Jersey is going to be doing the same thing. And it's pushing Governor Tom Wolf to reconsider the same thing. And once New Jersey or New York, especially New York, legalizes marijuana, then other dominoes are going to fall hard across the country.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what's happening in New Jersey and what's happening in New Jersey and New York, even Maryland to a certain degree, is having a major political effects on kind of politics in the state. I mean, even though just what you looked at with the, with passing a free college education to state schools up in New York, right, then seeing similar moves happening down in Maryland and things like this, where, you know, that's putting pressure and that's actually creating possibilities to see something like that in Pennsylvania. I mean, it seems like that, you know, Pennsylvania Pennsylvania is always trailing up from behind a little bit. And it's only when there's some worry or concern that there's going to be negative impact on the state before people will really act. But that's exactly where we are at this point.
Yeah. I know. I mean, like, look what happened this week. This week, Governor Wolf came out and we have to start looking at responsible ways of legalizing marijuana in the state.
Yep.
And he specifically said what's going to be happening in New Jersey and New York. And once it happens, I mean, like, people who live along the New York and New Jersey border will be able to go in there, get some marijuana, and come back in and do it legally.
Yep.
Now, obviously, it's still going to be illegal to have that possession here in Pennsylvania. But, I mean, it's sort of amazing that, I mean, even now we're getting at this point. And really, if you listen to Governor Wolf and what he was saying in his campaign, I mean, he completely did not rule out the way of – completely rule out supporting legalized marijuana.
Right.
I mean, he didn't really give a really good strong statement for it in the earlier this year. When
he wasn't campaigning on it.
Yeah, he wasn't campaigning on it. And he also – KDKA had an interview where he pretty much – like said, we're just going to stay on the sidelines of this. But, I mean, he's still using some of that same rhetoric. He's like, we should actually start going forward and doing this and looking at this in a more, like, responsible manner. Because once New York and New Jersey fall, it's just going to be it's going to be a domino effect across the country.
Well, I mean, given some other – his other policy initiatives that he's talking about for, you know, for the next administration, you know, his second – you know, legislative agenda coming up for this for the next year or two, like on NPR this morning, that what he said in addition to the stuff about legalizing marijuana and what's happening around here, is also saying that one of the major initiatives is going to be about criminal justice reform. So, you know, we've got Larry Krasner down in Philadelphia, kind of really shaking things up and kind of setting a standard across the country, really, for what criminal justice reform looks like. There's been, you know, I know that both John Fetterman and Tom Wolf, you know, have talked about this in the past. But I mean, not as much Tom Wolf, but now he's putting it forward. And I think this idea about criminal justice reform, you almost can't do that without legalizing marijuana at this point, right? Because what are you going to do? You got people going over to New Jersey, right, buying a pot legally, and then moving back into Pennsylvania, and then you're going to prosecute them like as you would
for possession,
right? So, I mean, it's like those two things seem to go hand in hand, especially when you look at the statistics of what's been happening in terms of, like, you know, the exploding prison populations for kind of low level drug offenses. So,
yeah. And so the Philadelphia Inquirer or the Daily News, Philly.com, had a really good story in its business report that we have in the show notes. So basically, like, it's about Jay Corman and the opposition to it from the GOP. State Senate Majority Leader Jake Corman vowed he would, quote, do everything in my power to prevent legalization of recreational marijuana. The governor's new position on this issue, legalizing the drug for recreational use, is reckless and irresponsible. Corman said in a statement Wednesday night, recreational marijuana is a mind-altering narcotic, which will harm our youth as it is a depressant and a gateway drug for all other legal substances. Combined that with the lack of credible research on societal cost, the opposition from prosecutors, the medical community, and law enforcement, and you have the making of a catastrophe. And then this is what the writer goes on to say. Legalization in 10 other states has applied only to residents over the age of 21. The notion of marijuana as a gateway drug to other illegal substances has long been debunked by studies. There has been opposition by some law enforcement officials and physicians, but many of legalization's strongest supporters are current and former prosecutors and doctors. I mean, it's great that you see someone getting fact-checked like that in the newspaper and yeah, not letting their statement stand alone.
Right.
And then Senator Mike Fulmer, who was one that was really responsible for pushing through the medical marijuana program, said, we don't need rec right now. He said, we're moving along. We're doing it the right way. We're far from where we need to be with research, but I want marijuana to become respected first. If we don't do it, it will become a joke and we'll slip back into the Cheech and Chong ways of thinking about it, which is absolute bullshit.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, I have tried marijuana before in the past, but no, I mean, it's something like for me, drinking and alcohol is a lot harder of a drug than marijuana. You know, we have, we're talking about stuff that's reckless. We have our we have a state system of funding set up on legalized gambling in this state, where we're, instead of taxation, we are, you know, have very regressive forms on gambling, which, you know, preys, it's a predatory industry. I mean, we have these vices like gambling and alcohol throughout the state. Marijuana is considerably a lighter drug than alcohol. And we also have a raging opioid epidemic happening in the state. And states that have legalized medical marijuana and legalized recreational marijuana have seen decreases in the opioid addictions.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, studies just came out that opiates aren't even that effective of painkillers for most certain types of pain, where, you know, you can alleviate those pains with different types of marijuana treatments. I mean, it is literally a cure-all drug, either for through THC or the CDB and other types of chemical chains that are inside of it. And we're not talking about like chemicals, like actual, no, the chemical bonds that are within the drugs itself, within the plant itself, you know, have very good medical uses.
And totally. And I think, you know, there's a couple things that I think that we're at the point in the kind of discussion on kind of legalizing marijuana that are kind of like a couple things. Like, one, we don't have to any longer compare it, like, to say, like, for example, it's not even necessary anymore, I don't think, to say that alcohol is potentially worse, right? I know there's been an argument that's for that. I think it's more like this. It's more like, look, we regulate alcohol, right, in a kind of a structured way. Is there some still problems that are there? Absolutely, right? Do minors still get it on occasion? Absolutely, right? The only question is one, is it going to be regulated? Is it going to be out in the open, right? And is it giving us a structure that's going to be able to kind of make sure that it's in the responsible, dealt with the most responsible way possible, right? And that's the same structure that we got for both medical marijuana legal and legalizing marijuana for recreational use, right? It's like, we don't have to pretend that, like, that pot, right, marijuana is like, you know, there's absolutely no downside to it at all. Well, no, it's like any other drug. If you take too much of it, you get in a car and drive, right? That you're going to be under the influence of driving, right? I mean, but that's the way I think that we think about it, right? And that's what we're seeing is some of the reports that are coming out from, you know, Oregon and Colorado and things like this, because we've had some time to deal with it now. Now they're dealing with some of their very practical questions about how you regulate it in such a way to make sure that everyone is safe, right? I mean, and who do you want? Do you want the, say, drug dealers to kind of have the upper hand, right, in terms of access to this stuff? Or do you want to have it kind of regulated in a kind of much more kind of open and transparent way? That's, I think, what's at the case now.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it's also we have the infrastructure in place to deal with the distribution system in place already, with the state stores and with the dispensaries that are popping up everywhere.
Yep.
I mean, it's only going to be a matter of time. I mean, until either Wolf's term, by the end of Wolf's term, or if we, have a Democratic majority in the House and Senate by 2022 and a Democratic governor, regardless of who it is, you know, it's going. I mean, like, you talk to cops about this, how much freaking paperwork and time gets brought up because of marijuana charges?
Yep.
Like, imagine, like, the time that won't be wasted for that. They'll be dedicated doing something else. And it's not a predatory. I mean, we also have to start looking at expunging all medical or all, like, marijuana related offenses within some sort of, like, degree. And, you know, just push for straight up legalization, recreational marijuana. I mean, I was out in Colorado a few years ago, was able to go to a couple of dispensaries out there. And I mean, it is a heavily regulated system that's in place.
Yep.
You have to, like, in Colorado, when we went to a dispensary, you have to show your ID at a door, and then you're, like, in a little, like, parlor or waiting room, and then you go into the next room, which is behind a closed door, and that's where it, like, the dispensary's at. So I mean, like, they're making sure you're over 21. You can't be wearing a hat and sunglasses while you go in there and stuff like that. So I mean, it's
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So cool. So you actually had this other thing that was kind of cool about some cool reports about some reporting from PLS, right, on stuff going on in Southeast PA, too, as well. Walk
yes.
us through that. So, I thought this was a really cool story.
Yeah. So Stephen Caruso, my friend who is from PLS, he actually dug into the story. He emailed me the other night, asked me for my email address so he could show it to me and see the type of reporting that he was able to do with this and dig down. Unfortunately, this is behind a paywall, but I was able to get a copy of his story, and it's actually pretty freaking cool. It reports on how the Democrats, and especially in the Southeast, were able to take 5 of 7 leadership positions with the help of Madeline Dean, who's going to Congress now, but she was the head of the Southeast Pennsylvania delegation. So you have the Philadelphia delegation and the Southeast delegation. And he documents over since 2010, you know, like the Democrats have always been like 50-50 split between Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. But Democratic leadership remained in the hands of the Western Pennsylvania Democrats, even though that they completely decimated in 2012, 14, and 16 with new maps coming in. And the center of the party has been in the southeastern part of the state now. It's just that clear. You see what's happening with, pickups, seats in Chester starting to flip. Seats in the Lehigh Valley are going to be starting to flip. I mean, it's all stemming from the Philadelphia suburbs are expanding outward into those outer collar counties of, like, you could say now the Lehigh Valley and Chester County and Lancaster County. We saw that with the elections this year, especially for Governor Wolf and stuff like that. In the past, the Southeast delegation and other delegations were susceptible of being divide and conquered strategies. And my friend Steve was able to get a hold of some emails that Madeline Dean had. Mm-hmm. Sent before the leadership elections. And so this is part of the story that he wrote. Quote, this is from Dean. In the past, delegations, not our own, have shut out the Southeast and failed to represent the strength of our region. Dean wrote in an email to the Southeast delegation from November 9th. But I am confident that we have the unity to change this year's results and bring leadership representation back where it belongs, the largest growing Democratic region in the state. And she was able to get these. He uncovered this, and was first. This has been reported on.
Yeah,
pretty much about how Madeline Dean was able to whip together the Southeast delegation, the Philadelphia delegation, and it get 5 of 7 leadership positions. You have Jordan Harris as the whip. You have Matt Bradford as the appropriations chair. You have McClinton, I think, as secretary. And then you have a bunch. There's some other seats, too.
Nice. Cool stuff. Yeah. Cool stuff. Great reporting. A huge shout out to Stephen Caruso for some great reporting on that, too, as well. So
yeah. Steve's been doing a lot of good work with PLS over the past several months since he's moved out here.
Yeah. And you know, Sean, there's this thing, I just keep on having this voices in my head, and I just can't remember what it's from.
I'm in a waste management business. Everybody immediately assumes you're mobbed up. It's a stereotype, and it's offensive.
It reminds me of someone, but I just can't put my finger on it. How we hardly knew ye. But as a last, final 2018 tribute to that thing that was Scott Wagner... Let's have little wavy kind of lines about what was going on. Wagner on higher education.
Your system is done in 4 years. You are out of runway. You are out of oxygen. And the taxpayers are not going to continue to pump money into the system. The union bosses have made sure that everybody has been highly taken care of, and they're driving you into bankruptcy. So for those of you that think your school's going to be around 4 years from now, it ain't going to be around. And I could tell you something.
And let's think about his love of workers.
So the workers that are down here in the hallways looking for work, I'd be happy to give them some numbers of employers in York that would probably pay wages somewhere between $12 and $15 an hour. But there are a couple things required. Number one,
you would have to have an alarm clock, and you would have to be able to get out of bed. You would be able to have to pass a drug test, and you would have to have some work ethic. I don't go into fast food restaurants every now and then, but maybe I'll stop for a coffee. And periodically, you'll notice somebody behind the counter on a cell phone, either talking on the cell phone or texting, and that's clearly against the company policy. You know, you'll look around, and you know, anywhere you go, there are younger workers with their pants hanging down, rear ends hanging out. They really don't care about their appearance. I don't care if you pay somebody $20 an hour. If they have a certain behavior, it's not going to change their behavior, and this is realism. We have given out so many government benefits over the last 5 years that we have more people riding the wagon than pulling the wagon.
And let's remember his brilliant scientific analysis of global warming.
The Earth moves closer to the sun every year. We have more people. You know, humans have warm bodies, so is heat coming off? We're just going through a lot of change, but I think we are, as a society, doing the best we can.
And let's just revisit that, you know, advice that, well, not advice, but the statement that he made about what it takes to actually run a winning gubernatorial campaign.
I'm smart enough to, you know, form my own opinions.
And you did, and you lost big. Sayonara, sucker.
I guess we gotta have like some reflection here, since it's like, you know, the end of the year.
Exactly.
And I like to reflect on things at this time of year, you know, thinking this is truly like the first year I've been like able to like plant and root myself in Harrisburg. And I've been down here for 4 years now. It's almost like the first year where I've actually starting to consider this place like my home. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
it's
kind of like a weird feeling with that. Like, it's like, wow, I came out here with a sense of like, yeah, I'll just stick out here for 4 years and see where I want to go after this. It's like, I actually want to commit myself to being out here on a longer term basis. It's nice out here in Harrisburg, but I remember the first Scott Wagner campaign event. It was cold. It was icy. It was January morning. And I drove down to New York, drove down to Penn Waste, and I got thrown out of his campaign event, snuck in.
I remember that. I remember that.
I still use the Scott Wagner notepad that they gave out in the media packet. It says Scott Wagner, vote for Scott Wagner on Tuesday, May 15th, 2018. I'm almost through this notepad. I'm going to be sad when I see it to go, but I might just keep it for like
posterity's sake.
Yeah.
You got to hold on to that. Do not, like, definitely put that thing in a Ziploc bag and, like, you know.
Yeah.
But seriously.
And then there was the young and naive comments.
The young and naive comment. I was realizing that today. I was like, oh, man, I don't have that sound loaded up for that one, too. Yep.
But
the young and
man,
naive comment.
That was, like, the best, like, thing.
Well, you know, and the crazy thing about it is it turns out, too, is like that was like, you know, that comment was like, I mean, our first like major, like, you know, introduction to the Sunrise Movement.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, and now it's like, whoa, they're like, you know, occupying Nancy Pelosi's office with AOC.
And I remember like when I remember back in like March, Steve O'Hanlon, who started the Sunrise Movement out here in like central Pennsylvania chapter, was getting in contact with me, and we were just talking about things. I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know, that's nice. Okay. You know, like, I didn't really think like they were going to blow up the way they did.
Yeah.
I mean, and they were at every town hall asking questions across the state. They were doing a really good job bird dogging him. And I mean, the thing is, like, that was at a time in the campaign, like, the wheels just like fell off the bus pretty much. I mean, with the Moon brothers, the Moon family. I mean, it was like the Moon family, and then and then him flipping out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
The billboard giving a epic rant for like eons to come.
Right, right.
No, I mean.
Well, we also have to remember the amazing speech that he gave to rile up his kind of like off the charts right wing supporters.
And my challenge by the ancient laws of combat, We are met at this chosen ground to settle for good and all. Who holds sway over the Five Points? Us natives, born rightwise to this fine land, or the foreign hordes defiling it?
Yeah, that was right. I think that's shortly after that is when there was a cross burning outside of Harrisburg, right? but then one of my favorite pieces of audio still connected to the Wagner campaign has still got to be his, how pissed off he was after. I can't remember if it was after they, one of his staff members took a picture of the goose shitting on him, or if it was after the comments that he made about the young and naive, or if it was after one of his many flubs. But anyways, it was that kind of really dressing down of his staff that was really telling, I think, of where the campaign was headed.
That's why I prefer the English Tigers for prefer.
Yeah, there it was, everybody. There it was.
Well, and then to top everything off, did you read the Politico piece that Holly Otterbein put out this week?
No, I didn't. Well, oh, yeah. We were talking about it, though. You were telling me about it.
Yes. So Holly Otterbein put out a piece that was like about the PAGOP and how it is like in complete disarray. Like they only got like $100,000 in their bank accounts right now. And like, yeah, like that was just that was awesome. Like everyone's like, they got quotes from people defending Val DiGiorgio. They got people saying, DiGiorgio is horrible. And really like, I mean, DiGiorgio didn't win the nomination for the party outright. He had to go to the second ballot and only win it by 2 votes.
Yep.
So, I mean, well, Val, we're hiring.
There you go. Oh man, yeah. So that's our end of the year tribute to all that was disaster, all that was entertainment, all that was.
I mean,
I don't know Sean's focus for the past couple of years.
I kind of like that. I feel like the reason why I moved out to Harrisburg was to mess with Scott Wagner.
Yeah.
Doing it. And now, like, I don't know what we're doing now. It's like he's gone.
Get that little hollow space inside, I bet.
Like,
oh, God.
Just be sitting on the deck.
The deck. You
know, the deck.
Look at Wagner. Well, he's still got the vinyl wrap on his building, from what you tell me, right?
Yeah. So we actually have a. So I have a running bet with some people living in Harrisburg. What's going to come down first, the vinyl wrap on the State Street building? So the State Street building is the skyscraper that is like directly across the street from the Capitol, like on the corner of Third and State is the State Street building. And that's the office where Scott Wagner's place is on the bottom floor. And that's where the Senate Republican Campaign Committee is at. That's where the House Republican Campaign Committee is at. That's where Novak is at and a bunch of other like Republican-led firms and stuff like that. Which, like, they're all glad he's gone because he kind of, like, just moved in and kicked everyone out of their offices and said, this is ours now. So, like, the vinyl wrap is still on that, like, window looking at State Capitol.
So just reminding everybody, like, this is the guy. This was our guy.
So we're wondering what's going to come down first, the Christmas tree?
Yeah.
Or?
I definitely think the tree comes down first.
The vinyl wrap.
I say the tree comes down first. Right. I think I come down on it's going to come down after the tree, but before the inaugural. That's my guess.
I think they keep it.
I don't know. Crazy.
It'll be fun, like walking up to the inaugural ceremony and seeing that there still.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. All right. Well, that does it with our PA focus for today, folks. Let's remind everybody there's still a little bit more to come. Today's last call. You become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/RC Press. This is our final 2018 show. Oh, my gosh. Here we go. We'll be back right after this quick break. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting, and commentary to the interwebs. are long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Yeah, getting gritty with it, everybody. It was Space Force getting gritty with it. Sean, let's start with, before we get to the incredible news coming out of the Space Force, we got to get a little gritty with it.
Yeah, so this week, Gritty was named the New Yorker, one New Yorker's Men of the Year.
There you go. Year of
men, and Gritty was featured in it prominently.
Although, so, I think you're going to have to change your pronoun there, my friend.
Well, Gritty is non-binary.
Exactly. So that was my point.
Yeah.
Right? What are you, some sort of Fox News contributor? What, do you got to have everything in binaries here? What?
So I am
Sean
in New
just,
year,
like, goes on.
No, I was just saying the first couple months of New Year, I am looking to get a Gritty-inspired tattoo.
Dun, dun, dun!
I think I'm going to look to do it as a, from Where the Wild Things Are. Like, yeah. One of those, like that illustration, but with Gritty. And I think what
trademark.
Either, do it on my calf or tricep. So we'll see.
There you go. You see which piece of muscular masculinity looks better on.
Well, since I have these blank canvases on my body.
There you go. Nothing like a little gritty. Getting gritty with it. Cool.
I want to do a gritty inspired tattoo, something like that. And so we'll see how it goes. I have a couple of tattoos I really want to get going that are Philadelphia inspired. So
there you go.
Another one is like a keystone with like the Liberty Bell in it, or like Independence Hall. And no, not like because of patriotism, but because I'm from Philly.
At some point, you're going to have to get the old railroad bridge in Harrisburg. That's been an object of your thing, but I guess you have to be there for a little bit longer before you feel comfortable marking up your blank canvas with that. Yeah. Well, news of the week in space news. I'll keep it quick, folks. The Pentagon indeed is basically finalized a proposal. It's moving forward that the Space Force is going to be a real thing. It's going to be organized, at least if the proposal goes through, it's going to be organized under the Air Force, kind of like the Marines are. Like the Marines are an independent organization, military wing underneath the Navy. The Space Force will be an independent military wing under the Air Force. So, if nothing stands in the way, if everybody thinks this is too like crazy nutty, it looks like the Air Force is actually finally getting behind this a little bit. So Space Force is going
to
happen.
I think we're trying to like just slow walk this into like 2020. It's like, God, we pray to God this guy's gone so we can give this shit up.
I don't think that's happening anymore. I think actually the Air Force is now that the Air Force, because the Air Force resisted it initially. There was original proposals came from years ago, I think, for somebody from... I don't remember where he's from, but their original proposal years ago, and the Air Force resisted it, right? But now that it's going to be under the Air Force, right? I mean, look at it in purely financial kind of like appropriations terms. That means more money for the Air Force. right? So that it sounds like there's at least some folks. I was reading some defense news reporting and things like this on it. There's some officials within the Air Force that are actually kind of getting behind this, because there's actually divisions within the Air Force already that are doing some of this space stuff, right? So that this actually kind of formalizes that and gives it a higher profile. So,
or they just won't spend the money and just
right. But you know, again, long term, it's gonna. I'm telling you, it's gonna happen. The other thing that was kind of interesting to see get launched, Arizona State University has got a program called New Space, and it's basically an institute. Well, actually, New Space is a program. It leads, and I'll just quote from their website, right, leads the integration of academic and commercial space enterprises using Arizona State University's core strengths in space science, engineering, and education. So basically, this is a state institution that is doing that is going all in with these kind of public-private partnerships. Lockheed Martin is one of the main funders of the of New Space and of this new institute, right? So so they have this place called New Space, and they're launching this institute called the Milo Institute, which will actually be the space where this gets operationalized, right? And that's basically what they're calling it. They're saying, quote unquote, affordable, accessible space science, right? So what's fascinating about this is that you have – so New Space is like integrates all this stuff. The Milo Institute, what they're pitching at least is that, say, look, there's I can't remember the number of projects, but like there's dozens of projects that get proposed through NASA for every year, right? But only a few of them get funded, right? Simply because of the lack of funding. So the pitch that they're making through this Milo Institute is like, we need other places, right? Non-governmental spaces where we can do some of that science, right? And find additional roads of funding. So, of course, Lockheed Martin is kind of jumping in on that, as will, I'm sure, a bunch of the other kind of major aerospace industries to kind of fund this program. So apparently their first ever mission, right, is called like Neo. Let me see if I can find it. It's like Neo Geo or something like this. I'm not going to be able to find it right over. But it's basically looking at near Earth objects, right? So basically, there's been a lot of discussion. You know, these asteroids are flying around and things like this, and they could potentially have catastrophic, you know, impacts or whatever, blah, blah, blah. So this is actually going to, the first mission is going to try to study these near Earth objects. so we'll see. But I'm telling you, mark my words. It's all coming. And what's interesting, I should have put this in the show notes initially. I bought Kim Stanley Robinson's new book. If you remember, you heard me talk about him before. He's the author of the Mars Trilogy and a bunch of stuff like this. His new book is called Red Moon. And what's fascinating about it, I'm just about 100 pages into it now. What's fascinating about it so far is that it's set up so that the moon has, you know, kind of takes place in the near future. The moon, initial moon colonies have happened now. And the Americans, right, are in the north, and the Chinese are in the south. And the Chinese have a much larger presence on the moon. And what's fascinating to me about this is, like, this is, again, Kim Stanley Robinson being out in front of a lot of kind of developments and thinking through where this can go, because the Chinese have just announced that they are going to be making the moon a priority in terms of its aerospace or kind of space missions and things like this. So it's a fascinating book so far. It's kind of a little bit of a whodunit, mystery, intrigue, that kind of thing. But, you know, like always, Kim Stanley Robinson does not disappoint. And so there's that. The other big news of the week, was that, you know, there's a lot of people that were a little sadder this week because they were no longer friends with Sean on Facebook. Isn't that right, Sean?
Yeah.
So what happened, Sean?
I went on a ruthless purge this weekend.
And why, indeed, did you do that?
Just arguing and bickering about 2020. And I was just like, you know, I've added so many people on Facebook over the years.
Yeah.
Who I've never met, mainly just in a different, and I just wanted to have my Facebook feed a bit more personalized, keep my Facebook more private. And, you know, pretty much if I haven't met these people in person, or don't know who they are, then I just got rid of them.
Yeah.
And so it felt good. And I feel like I'm leading a trend because now
you're leading a trend.
Well, now some of my friends are like, I am going on a massive Facebook purge.
There you go.
We're just deleting it and like coming, because it's like I went from like 1,300 friends down to like 750 this past week.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a lot of the people were from different movements I haven't talked to in years and stuff like that. And it was just like, a lot of deleted accounts, a lot of accounts that probably blocked me from my political posts. People from high school who blocked me and just cleaning up a lot of like trash, pretty much.
Well, there you go.
I mean, I don't want to say it like that, but
Sean Kitchen taking out the trash. You heard it here on AltiCube Podcast.
If people are like, my thing is like, if people are so compelled to interact with me, they can just tweet at me, which is like, find me on Twitter and we can talk about things on Twitter, which I mean, I do a lot of like back and forth with like different people on Twitter who I'm not friends with on Facebook.
Yeah.
So
there you have it. We had a clean out 2018, everybody.
Yeah.
Get ready for the next round.
Getting ready for 2020.
Well, cool. So I got my last little bit. I got Free Will has a double can release this weekend, tomorrow at both locations. They have got Micromosa. It's a mimosa-inspired IPA with blood oranges. Those are in 16-ounce cans, 4 packs available at both locations. And the other is the it's a double dry-hopped Imperial India Cream Ale called Love Letter from the 90s. It's actually – that's a great beer.
That is really good.
It's really, really good. So that is comes in at 7.2% ABV. Again, both locations, 16-ounce can, 4 packs. so if you're looking to pick up a little something from the holidays, swing by there. I think that I spent too much money at Free Will a couple weeks ago. So at some point we have to pass some of that on to you, Sean. I got a specialty 4-pack save for you. What blew my mind is they are actually putting out 4 packs of Ralphius.
Ah, oh,
that's what you're getting. I'm going to spoil the gift because what's that?
I am driving home tomorrow.
Well, they may have some still left. I know they were going fast. They also have which I haven't had yet. They have a bunch of those are the cans, and they have some bunch of the bottled ones. I think I talked about it on the show a couple of weeks ago with all these kind of specialty Ellas and specialty Ralphiuses. Do check it out. Do check it out.
So I am going home tomorrow from Harrisburg, so I might be able to swing by and see if you're around.
I may be here.
If you're not on your deathbed.
Yeah, exactly. I just feel like crap today.
I decided to go home tomorrow and just not wait till Sunday because I just need a couple days. But my mom is making cookies all day tomorrow. So.
And you're going to be helping her, right, Sean?
My niece is, actually.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
Yes, yes. My niece has been like, when my mom moves the cookie or like the big blender, the mixer,
uh-huh.
She takes the towel off and everything uncovers it. My niece is right there looking. She knows what's coming.
Awesome. Like,
and my niece has been helping out with her baking stuff. And
I'm sure your mom's going to love that too as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to Christmas. I'll be around for a few days next week, and then just back up in Harrisburg for January 1st, which we will see if the Republicans decide to seat Lindsey Williams or not.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. And so, if you've been purged from Sean's Facebook page, no worries. Just head down in to Forest and Maine and wait it out, and he'll show up the next few days. All right, man. Well, listen.
I've actually been cutting back on the beer lately, trying to at least. So
yeah, I've just not been feeling right for the last couple of weeks. I overspent it at Free Will because I just have not had the desire to actually have any beers lately. But then when I finished my semester on Tuesday, I headed over to the Saucony Creek. And I had one an awesome it was like a mac and cheese with barbecue pork, right? Which was freaking great. It was exactly what I needed at that point because I was exhausted and whatever. And then they had their I'm going to forget it. What, unicorns with snowshoes? Is that what it is? I forget what it is, but it was really good. Had that as a way of kind of capping off the year, and then I had. Last week I had a Ralphius and stuff, and I was like, oh man, this hit me hard. So cool. Anyways, man, if for whatever reason we can't go, because I'm going to be away for part of break this time. If we don't run into each other, I hope you have an awesome, awesome Christmas. But we'll probably talk online before then too as well. I wish everyone listening to the podcast, we made it all the way through today as usual, wish you a awesome new year. And if you're celebrating Christmas, have an awesome Christmas and at least a break. Hopefully that everybody's going to get a little bit of a break over the next few days before New Year's Eve. And we'll be back with you in 2019 with a whole lot of other things on our agenda. So any last words for 2018, Sean?
Nope. Have fun. Have a good New Year's. Have a good holidays. Enjoy Christmas. If you celebrate that, enjoy Yule or any other pagan holiday you decide to celebrate. And Festivus is tomorrow or Sunday, so let's have fun with that.
There you go. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thanks for a, we'll say, a great 2018 because it's been nuts. But we'll see you in 2019. Refreshed, ready to go. See ya!